We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a correction from The Independent, read by Harriet Cass.
In our article, Off, the Rise and Fall of Britain's Flashiest Referee, we used a photograph of Mark Clattenburg and Helen Henderson, whom we described as his fiancée. The photograph was taken in 2000, and Helen Henderson is no longer Mr. Clattenburg's fiancée, but his former wife.
And our thanks to Clive Guzzi for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Chris Addison. And opposite them on my left, Andy Hamilton and Phil Jupiter. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Dean Martin, 2 points. No.
No.
It's been snowing. It's been lovely. Oh, we all took the day off on Monday. I work from home and I took the day off. I was snowed in, so I went out. I went to Streatham Common. We finally found out who all the posh people are in Streatham because they turned up with their skis. And then all the curmudgeons started saying, oh, it's a national disgrace. And Canada, they have 12 foot of snow and they're prepared for it. Well, we're not prepared for it because it only happens once every 18 years. If in Canada they suddenly had weather that was very mild for the time of year, or neither one thing nor the other, the whole country would grind to a standstill. What we should have had is some salt. But if you think about it, all the children who are off school on Monday and Tuesday, there would be enough salt in their lunchboxes to grit the roads of the country four times over. They probably didn't eat all that Monster Munch then because they were out making snowmen. There is a national glut of Monster Munch building up. We could just crumble that up and use that as grit. As long as we don't use the pickled onion, because that's a bit corrosive and could cause potholes.
There was something terribly pleasing that every time they showed a shot of a car sliding inexorably into a hedge, it was a 4x4. It was something...
There was a lot of that sort of public reportage. The BBC News, my Monday lunchtime, had 16,000 pictures from people of snow. We know what snow looks like. The minimum requirement I have of a news programme is I shouldn't be able to see what it is from out of my own window.
But they went very schizoid, the news, didn't they? Because they started off with all the winter wonderland. Send us in your lovely snaps of the snow. And they sent out local reporters saying, the field behind me is literally covered with snow. They swung from that to that very dark, this treacherous snow lures innocent motorists to their fate. And then they went on to the very alarmist estimates say that this freeze could have cost the British economy £3 billion. And my immediate reaction was, so what? I mean, a banker can write that off with one transaction.
Why is it that I am filled with rage that the weather's like that outside and then I go in and my kids have been bunked off school by the whip-smart local education authority and they're indoors snowboarding on the Nintendo Wii?
It really brought out the innocence in the kids in our street, though, because they got the snow and they built a huge wall across the pavement and then beat the crap out of each other by throwing snowballs across the wall. We thought, there's humanity in a nutshell. Oh, it's a lovely snow. Build a wall, have a war.
The thing is, if you were in it at the BBC on Monday, we all knew the weather was going to be bad because we saw Michael Fish coming to work in flip-flops and a Hawaiian. Well, it's Britain's heaviest snow for 18 years, shut thousands of schools and caused travel chaos. London buses were cancelled even though they had run through the Blitz. But you do think that somewhere in Argentina at the moment there's some German who invented the doodle bug thinking, snow, if I just thought of snow. Boris Johnson said, this is the kind of snow we haven't seen in London for decades. Well, we've got a 1930s economy. 2 points to Jeremy. Chris, which set of bankers are set to cash in?
Oh, all of them. But particularly the Royal Bank of Scotland. Yeah, the bankers are getting bonuses despite the fact that they have messed up absolutely massively. I think last year they gave 18.3 billion pounds to their employees, the Royal Bank of Scotland. It's an astonishing amount of money. To be fair, that's all in pounds, so it's not really worth a lot.
What is a billion, is it?
Because it's about America. 40 quid.
There's been all these bailouts in America of the banks, and they've been giving just too much cash to all these various banks, and with the hope that it'll get the economy going again. Bank of America got a bailout money and, I believe, put a couple of million into having a five-day disco outside the Super Bowl before it happened. And then another bank in America sent all of its senior staff on a morale-building trip to Las Vegas, because nothing is going to teach you financial prudence like a week of pontoon, a prostitute, and watching a gay German riding a tiger.
In this country, we own the banks, don't we? Now we pretty much own them. So does that not make the bankers state property as well? I mean, could we not use them for something useful? Could we not mince them up and grit the roads? Do you not think this?
There was a thing in the Times that said that they had to get the bonuses because a lot of the employees were, you know, were expecting the standard 10% of their salary bonus, and that bankers' unions would be furious if this didn't happen. Bankers' unions. Who knew about them? Bankers of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but those little chains they keep the pens on the counter with. Imagine wildcat strikes by those bankers. What would that be? It'd be terrible. You'd have to wait 4 days for payments to go. No, actually.
You'd be standing around braziers burning money, wouldn't I? But the trouble with this job is we have to read all the papers, and so you find the bits where the columnists are saying, actually, it would be wrong to deny these people their bonuses because they take their skills elsewhere into other industries. You
know? Do they worry that they'll leave banking or that they'll go into other industries and wreck those as well?
Yeah, they'll all go into mining and fishing and stuff.
Things are... Instead of a pit pony, you'll have a bloke called Piers from Guildford dragging a trolley.
I won't going to be down here much longer because this is actually bloody tiring.
What they're going to do is that they're not going to give them actual money for the bonuses, they're going to give them Royal Bank of Scotland shares, and I don't think you can even use those in Zimbabwe as currency. The Royal Bank of Scotland, which was rescued with 20 billions of public money, is planning large bonuses for thousands of city traders and senior bankers. I would have thought the fact they haven't been lynched should be a bonus. Things are bad. I went into my local branch and the teller put a stocking over her head. Interest rate's gone down too? Quick bonus point?
1%.
1% quick bonus there for Andy. You're going to make...
1%. They're just keeping your money in a box, basically.
Yeah, like, people keep saying...
Service your granny could provide.
2 points to Chris. Andy, what hasn't changed with the new Obama administration? And when you answer, if you wouldn't mind, try not to cover anything up.
The special relationship between us and America, as exemplified by Madonna and Guy Ritchie. What seems to have happened is that there is this case going through, this man who suffered rendition, was taken to Morocco, was tortured, and the court wanted the publication of an American report. And they were told by the Foreign Office, oh, no, you can't do that because the Americans will threaten to withdraw all intelligence cooperation. So it's all pretty shocking. And it's even more shocking that this is being dealt with by a 15-year-old.
I find this word rendition actually quite offensive because it's torture. Can we please, if we mean torture, say torture? Because when I think of rendition, I think of Barbara Dixon on the Two Ronnies in the mid-set. Ladies and gentlemen, would you meet angry Barbara Dixon with a lovely rendition of this song, and then you cut to her and she's waterboarding Ronnie Barker.
But if you hear me sing, it is torture.
There's got to be something else. I mean, what have the Americans got that they're blackmailing the... Are there negatives of the Queen Mother with Hermann Göring? What is the...
They have done it before. They did it in the 1950s with Kim Philby. It's a wonderful example of the difference between Americans and English people. There were a lot of security leaks in the 50s, and a lot of agents were being mysteriously rubbed out the other side of the Iron Curtain. And the Americans went through the very logical procedure. They looked at all the cases that had gone wrong, and they drew a big sort of Venn diagram, and all the points bisected at one man, Kim Philby. He was the common element in all this. So they said to the British Secret Services, they said, Kim Philby is a traitor. And the reaction of the British Secret Services was, Kim Philby? It's a marvellous chap. Have you met him? Marvellous, salt of the earth, would do anything for you.
I fell asleep in the news quiz. I woke up in the middle of Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
The other great thing was eventually the British worked out that Kim Philby was a spy. So they rang up the nearest sort of intelligence officer in Beirut and they said, bad news, it turns out Kim Philby's a spy. He said, what, Kim Philby? Marvellous bloke, was with him the other night. And they said, no, they said, you've got to arrest him for treason. And he said, oh, what now? He said, yeah, he said, well, it's Friday. Like, he said, I'm actually off for a weekend skiing. And they said to this man, oh, that'd be all right, do it Monday.
2 points to Andy. Two High Court judges have accused the US and UK governments of trying to cover up evidence of the torture of a British resident being held in Guantanamo. The two senior judges are Lord Justice Thomas and Mr. Justice Lloyd Jones. What are the chances? Two judges both called Justice. Few of the Guantanamo suspects have been formally charged, but many have had a couple of 100 volts casually run through them. Round one, the scores are that Jeremy and Chris have got 4 points, but Andy and Phil are in the lead with 5. And we start round two with a special sale offer.
Telstra prepay broadband was £149, now £148.99.
And our thanks to Orlando Klein for spotting that. Jeremy, by golly, who's been sacked?
Oh, God, well, Carol Thatcher's no longer welcome on the One Show. And then, of course, the Telegraph and the Mail are all saying, this is revenge against Lady Thatcher. You think, well, it's a long time coming and rather tangential and feeble. They're saying she's being punished for who her mother was. And you think, if anything, I don't think we would have put up with her were it not for the fact that we feel sorry for her because of the appalling childhood that she must have had. Now, there might have been a time when it was fine to talk like that before Mr. Wilberforce and his PC brigade came along. Killjoys. And there's been all these letters in the Telegraph saying, when I was a child in the 18th century, my father made me a simple toy from a slave that he'd whipped to death, and I loved that toy. Why would it even occur to you to see a black person and think, oh, golly, what? At a time when a few weeks ago, hundreds of thousands of black Americans stood in front of the Capitol building and wept to see a sight that they never thought that they would see, and there's Carol Thatcher, presumably watching the telly thinking, oh, gollywog.
Is it possible that the tennis player was wearing a blue suit and a red and white striped waistcoat? It's nice, isn't it? The BBC stock in trade is knee-jerk reactions. It's nice that one went the right way for a change.
It's a little anxious, BBC. I've got a list of things we're not to say. Just... what happens in the green room should be kept quiet and it's nobody else's business?
Well, I haven't repeated what Phil said.
I know.
What goes to Nuremberg stays at Nuremberg.
Carol Thatcher has been dumped from The One Show for referring to a tennis player as a gollywog. The new controller of BBC One, Joseph McCarthy, declared... declared Carol Thatcher won't be banned from the BBC as a whole and that she's been lined up to work on Woman's Hour as their jam correspondent. 2 points to Jeremy. Chris, what do I want? An answer to this question. When do I want it? Now, please.
Wildcat Strikes, yes. Which, coincidentally, is my porn name.
Wildcat Strikes and...
Does everyone have a porn name?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Well, don't you have one, Jeremy?
Yours no. Is Humbert Unkledink. We tried to keep it from you.
Isn't your porn name the name of your first pet and the first road you lived in?
Yeah. I thought it was your mother's maiden name and your first pet.
No, right, well, then I'd be Timmy Trotter.
What is it?
Timmy Trotter.
Now, what's the formula?
Your mum's maiden name and your first pet.
Yeah, also, your date of birth, your bank sort code. No.
This is about foreigners coming over here and taking over our news quizzes.
Wildcat Strike, People went nuts because Italian workers were coming over here, taking jobs at the I kept missing it as the linseed oil refinery, which isn't a thing that happens. I was thinking there'll be nothing to wipe down cricket bats with. We won't be able to play cricket. And then I thought, we can't play cricket anyway. It doesn't really matter. But Oh, get over it. These people have taken jobs at this oil refinery and the workers there didn't like it. And so they went on strike. And then suddenly the refinery said, well, OK, you can have 102 other jobs. Where did those come from? They got a drawer with spare jobs in.
It has been politically confusing, Jeremy, because there's been a kind of consensus between the far left and the far right. It's a bit like you playing tennis with Kilroy. This is the story of hundreds of wildcat strikers downing tools, angry at claims that British workers were being undercut by Italian labour at the Lindsay oil refinery in Lincolnshire. 700 contractors at Grangemouth oil refinery walked out, forgetting they were on the coast and had to be rescued by Air Sea. Andy, whose theory has gone out of Darwindo?
As part of this general retreat from rationalism, there is now a quarter of the British public, according to a survey by somebody saying they think that Darwin just made it up.
Well, apparently one in three Britons think that God created the world within the last 10,000 years.
I mean, one in three?
Yeah, but they don't put an exact date on it. That would be ridiculous.
The Tuesday.
Yeah, it was a Tuesday.
Are these the same people who've been writing? I couldn't believe that. David Attenborough said he's been getting threatening letters from creationists. What sort of nutter do you have to be to threaten the life of David Attenborough? I mean, that is ridiculous, isn't it?
I think what you need to do with a survey like that is that figures should be adjusted in the way that we seasonally adjust unemployment figures. We should adjust surveys for stupidity, essentially. So, according to the raw data, one in three Britons thinks that God created the world in the last 10,000 years, but adjusted for stupidity, nobody thinks that.
Why are they having a go at David Attenborough? Is it because his brother was in Jurassic Park?
It's a lovely idea, though, creation, isn't it? It's a wonderful idea, like God walking along the coast of Dorset with a trowel and some fossils, pushing them into the cliff, sort of grousing over them.
Yeah. Like, this will give them something to talk about.
But haven't they just found a big skeleton of a land-living whale?
Yes.
That's more than 10,000 years old, isn't it? Surely to God.
Because when you've been intelligent designing for 4 or 5 days, you get a bit bored at the end of the week and you start mugging about a bit. That was one of his Friday afternoon animals, wasn't it?
If there was intelligent design, why do I not have an airbag? I think it would be really useful. Or a heated rear screen or something. I just think it would be good.
Why don't you have an airbag? You mean if you're falling over, why doesn't it spring out and save you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Bra's too tight. Help you, my dear.
Brace yourself for an impact, madam. Objects in this mirror may be closer than they first appear.
Charles Darwin's theory of evolution is only believed by a quarter of Britons, according to a survey for think tank Theos. The majority believe that evolution does not explain the full complexity of life on Earth. I will be honest and say, when I look at Cliff Richard, Anne Widdecombe and Anne Atkins, I do wonder if survival of the fittest is a bit flawed. 2 points to Andy. Phil, why might we be saying hidey-hi to more homegrown holidays?
Pontins is back. Book early. Butlins as well is back on the home holiday trail. They are building a boutique hotel within their Bognor Regis complex.
This means I could inflict my childhood on my children.
Yeah.
Did you go to holiday camps?
Yes. Madison's, Butlin's, Pontins. Yeah, knobbly knees competitions. Donkey derbies. I was a cert to win the donkey derby, but I fell off with that 3 yards to go. My Uncle Arthur was furious. He had some money on me.
These news stories are all sort of made to sound positive, like, well, a positive side of the recession is that the kidney buying industry is booming. And that thanks to the number of homeless, there's less snow on the pavements.
Because there's no money for medicine, it's go, go, go for the caliper industry.
Years ago.
Can I just recommend to everybody to go to Denmark for their holiday? The chalets at Legoland are very reasonably priced, and if you don't like them, it doesn't take a minute to rebuild.
And when you're in Denmark, make sure to talk to one of our amusing little red jackets. Yeah. I am Sandy. Herring? We have herring in 24 different sauces.
How for? What kind of crap place is this? That's how upmarket. Butlins are going to have sushi.
They said pan-fried fillet of sea bass. They said there will even be, like this, a shibboleth, like it's a middle-class thing. As soon as there's pan-fried fillet of sea bass, gracious heavens, Marjorie, gather the children!
But that is missing out on the central, one of the key core experiences of going to a holiday camp, which is food poisoning. Because that was one of the highlights. I can remember being served some pork luncheon meat that was bright red, and me and my brother saying, instinctively, like animals at a polluted waterhole, instinctively, instinctively not eating it. And my dad said, what's the matter with you? There's, you know, worse where there's none. And my dad ate all the portions, woke up in hospital.
I went to huntings in Cornwall when I was a kid. I lost my virginity. Thank you.
Those people sounded like they didn't expect that you had done already.
I did indeed. I can still remember her knobbly niece.
It wasn't the, tell me it wasn't the glamorous grandmother competition.
The recession has boosted the fortunes of the holiday camp business. Pontins are creating 2,000 new jobs. That's just what the country needs, 2,000 new entertainers. At its peak in the 1960s, Pontins had 24 camps, as documented in the much-loved film The Great Escape. At the end of round two, I can tell you the scores are Jeremy and Chris have got 8 points, but Andy and Phil are still in the lead with 9. Before we start round three, here is a cryptic customer notice that Matthew Bray spotted in his local supermarket.
Have your pet captured in my own unique way. Telephone for more info.
Jeremy, where should children be seen and heard?
Is this Mariella Frostrup's museum thing?
It is.
Because museums, traditionally, they're just Victorian plunder, aren't they? You'd be taken round this stuff and they'd say, don't touch that, it's evidence. Because basically, Victorian buccaneers travelled the world. There's a wonderful place, the Horniman Museum in Forest Hill, and it's just stuffed with all this nicked gear.
The Horniman has a fantastic exhibit in the middle of it, which is a walrus. My son's three. This is one of his favourite things, is this idiot walrus in the middle of the ground floor. They were sent a walrus pelt by whoever had shot it, but they'd never seen a walrus. So they just kept stuffing it. They didn't realise that walruses have rolls and rolls of fat. And, you know, the skin sort of folds in on itself. So they just kept going, we're going to have to get some more straw. And they just kept shoving it and shoving it and shoving it. And days and days and days. And they have, as a consequence, got what looks like somebody's drawn a walrus face on a zeppelin, essentially.
I do like when you go to local museums. I remember going to a local museum in one of the Channel Islands. And there was a display of things from the Second World War. And there was a little jug, and then it had a little card that way. And I can't see anything without my glasses on, so I carefully got out my glasses and I put them on to see what it said about it, and it just said, jug.
I was driving down a road in the West Country, and I don't know how I didn't drive off the road and crash. And you know that when they've got a sign illustrating a site of tourist interest, they're brown. And I swear, the sign said, Monkey World Tank Museum. And I actually thought that this was one attraction.
On a slight tangent, I once did a gig at the Gloucester Arts Centre, which also had a cinema. I turned up and the blackboard outside said, Jeremy Hardy, Bandit Queen.
A new charity, Kids in Museums, was launched this week to make museums more welcoming to youngsters. According to their manifesto, museums are places for families to chat, have conversations and discuss. I thought that place was the checkout at Lidl. I worked there 3 nights a week. Honestly, none of us know how long we'll last. The new charity believes museum attendance should be stopped from shushing children. I quite agree. Tasers, I'm thinking. Phil, who thought a bird in the hand was worth two down the trousers?
Wasn't there a geezer on a plane? He put some pigeons down his tights because he carries a couple of pigeons around with him in case his mobile signal goes. That is real hardcore twittering, that is. Yeah. If you actually carry pigeons around with you.
Because they've got sharp beaks, you can't take them on planes in your hand luggage anymore.
So if this guy has got the pigeons down his trousers, if he's asked by the, I don't know, the customs to pull down his trousers, would you imagine the temptation to say, are you looking at my bird?
He was smuggling racing pigeons. It's a bizarrely crime-ridden sport.
His defence was that they crawled in there and they were nesting without his knowledge. It wasn't the funniest story on the plane this week.
But according to the paper, he was also carrying, and I like this, some seeds and an undeclared aubergine.
Pigeon moussaka. Yeah.
An Australian air passenger returning from the Middle East was caught smuggling two live pigeons in his trousers. I don't think he heard the phrase carrier pigeon and mistook it for a command.
Sandy, yes. Does that mean we're not going to do the funniest air travel story of the week?
Yes, it does.
Oh, Sandy, we've got to do Aeroflot. It's absolutely hilarious. These passengers got on an Aeroflot flight, I think it was New York to Mexico City, and the pilot came on to say good morning, and they couldn't even work out what language he was speaking. He was so drunk. And so what happened was that quite a few of the passengers expressed consternation. So they sent for the head of customer relations, who got on the plane and said to them, listen, he's not drunk, and even if he was, it doesn't matter, these planes fly themselves.
2 points to Phil. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Jeremy.
This was sent in by Glenn Cumming, and it was from an item on BBC Southern Counties Radio. And in other news, President Obama has had his $800 billion bailout plan approved, and the redevelopment of Crawley Town Centre will be discussed on Monday.
Chris.
This is from Chris Talbot, who sends this from southwest France. It is from an expat newspaper, The Connection. Death was banned by the mayor of an Aquitaine village, who ruled that any residents who did not have a prearranged plot in a village cemetery should not die on the territory because of lack of grave space. The mayor of Saperins, Gerard Lalanne, said anyone breaking the order would be severely punished.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Chris have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Andy and Phil with 13. Before we leave you, here is some helpful advice from Somerset Pathology Services Fertility Investigations Department.
Instructions for sperm donors. On arrival, ask for Mr. Hancock. Do not leave your sample anywhere apart from with Mr. Hancock or one of his staff.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Chris Addison, Andy Hamilton and Phil Jupiters. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Harriet Cass. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Roderick Crooks and James Sherwood, with additional material by Stephen Carlin and Steve Daly. The producer was Victoria Lloyd.